Welcome back, everybody. It is 3 a.m. here. This is part two to the suicide prevention. This is Food for Thought, Thoughts If It Were You by Neo Gentrix. Now, last time we were talking about different causes and ways that can push a person towards suicide and the basic statistics for it based off of the national averages. Okay? Now, with that being said, we're going to pick up what I left off. And we're going to talk about treatments, okay? There are ways to help and treat people who are aiming towards that, or for whatever reason are thinking or considering such actions, okay? 90% of people who die by suicide have a mental disorder at the time of their deaths, and there are biological and psychological treatments that can help address the underlying health issues that put people at risk for suicide. And I want to make sure I cover at least a few of these, because I, for one, don't like seeing my friends or watching my friends die in front of me. Okay? At this time, there's only one medication. Clozapine, I think I pronounced that wrong, but God help me. It's been approved by the FDA for suicide risk reduction in patients with schizophrenia. Now, there is one study of mood disorder patients that have, that shows that treatments with antidepressants and antipsychotics and lithium, ironically, reduced death by suicide. Now, I don't know how much of that is actually true, but I mean, they've been testing it. There are meta-analyses of small lithium studies that show that suicide is reduced in patients with either bipolar disorder or major depression taking lithium. But those findings are controversial. So, just because you see something online, then it says it helps. It may be a hit and miss. Whether it does work may only work for that one person. Keep this in mind, like I mentioned before in a previous podcast, that medicines affect everybody differently. There's no one medicine for everyone. If that was the case, we wouldn't have any problems. Okay? There are two proven psychotherapies for treating those who attempt suicide. Cognitive behavioral therapy for suicide attempters, and dialectical behavioral therapy for patients with borderline personality disorder and reoccurring suicidal ideations and behaviors. Clearly, these short-term interactive therapies make a difference. There are many small studies of various interventions, including promising short-term therapies that include the family, the show that repeat suicide attempts are reduced under the treatment of condition being tested. Now, while these are, I guess you could say, helpful in treating it, they're not the only other ways. I mean, there is treatment for major depression, okay? And that is, again, one of the major causes of suicide. Research shows that that teaching healthcare professionals to recognize and treat depression is an effective way to reduce suicide rates, and this has actually been proven true. They focus on how depression can be treated, both with medications and psychotherapy, which we've discussed before. And if the depression is mild, the doctor may begin with psychotherapy alone and add medication later if the symptoms don't improve. So basically, by managing to get rid of the depression that would otherwise lead to it, they reduce the possibility of it happening. Next is medications. Many medications are available to treat depression, and the most common of which are antidepressants. Which, by the way, coffee is a depressant. It is not an accelerant. Just going ahead and tell you that now. It's not going to help you in this situation. It might make it worse. About 22 medications are currently approved by the FDA, okay? And since there is no accurate test to match a specific person's symptoms and complaints with the right medication, there's no way to actually know which drug will work best for a particular person, going back to what I was saying before. And the person who may be depressed should discuss with their doctor the medication choice and how to take it, as well as the potential side effects. Sometimes there is the need to try a few different medications before finding the one that actually gives the best result with minimum side effects. When the optimal dose with the best medication is achieved, the antidepressant may take from 4 to 12 weeks to actually achieve maximum benefit, but I mean, it is possible for one or two symptoms to improve in the first few weeks. Don't get me wrong. There is progress, okay? When antidepressants are started and when doses are increased, a few patients, especially children, adolescents, and young adults, may experience increased anxiety, agitation, restlessness, irritability, and anger, which may lead to suicidal thoughts or attempts. Now, these should be outlined by the doctor before the treatment ever begins, okay? Picking up with the last piece, we're going to continue talking about the treatment methods. I had mentioned before psychotherapies. That's the next topic. Beyond medicines, specific types of psychotherapy have been proven to be effective for treating depression. Now, there are usually short-term, and they last from 12 to 16 weeks. They're basically formalized and interactive to make the person actually do stuff. Sessions may take, they take place once or twice a week with a professional who has been specially trained and certified in the treatment that they're using, okay? And the most common types of psychotherapy for depression are cognitive behavioral therapy, interpersonal therapy, behavioral activation, and cognitive behavioral analysis. System of psychotherapy. There is clear evidence from research studies that combining antidepressants with one of these therapies is the best treatment for chronic depression, meaning that the patient has a depressive illness for 2 years or more. But most of these cases, people have managed to alter their mindset and allow them to come out of it sooner. So it's a rarity, but it does happen that people become depressed for an extended period of time. And with that being said, bringing up the different kinds of therapy, I have to, how do I put this in a nice way? I have to bring up electroconvulsive therapy. It's basically a last resort, among other things. Basically, if the depression doesn't respond to the treatment, or if it is very severe, or if psychotic symptoms appear, there's an additional treatment that should be used. And the oldest and best studied is electroconvulsive therapy. It's basically a treatment that can be given as an out or inpatient, but requires anesthesia and the delivery of a small electrical current to the brain. And while I don't condone this one, it actually has been pretty effective. But it does have side effects, as you would imagine, which the doctors are working to reduce, but still, I would consider this a last resort if it has to even happen to anybody, so don't even recommend this to anybody. A similar treatment is transmagnetic stimulation, which is less dramatic and may not be as effective, unfortunately. Finally, for those who suffer from seasonal mood disorder, or SAD as some people call it, the doctor may suggest light therapy in addition to other treatments, but it beats the electroconvulsive therapy, which, again, I do not recommend. Now, all these other ones I put up for grabs if it's necessary, but that one, just no, okay? Next to last, we have the treatment for bipolar disorder, okay? Another high-risk group is people with bipolar disorder, which is characterized by mood swings from high maniac to low depressed. Often with periods of feeling normal in between, those with bipolar disorder are at a great risk for they are at the greatest risk for suicide, as they are in a depression or mixed mood state, making them indecisive, which is very dangerous. With bipolar disorder, the doctors will begin treatment with a mood stabilizer, such as lithium. I really don't like saying that. Mood stabilizing anticonvulsants and antipsychotics. Some of these words these people come up with. Anyway, the use of antidepressants for the depressive phase of the illness is sometimes important, but there is no evidence that antidepressants have long-lasting results, making them the best tool to be used for bipolar disorder, okay? I'm having a very off day. It's very hard to say certain things. Now, last but not least, the treatment for alcohol and drug abuse. Now, I've covered a lot of different things already before on how to deal with this, but according to the AFSP, when combined with depression, bipolar disorder, or any mental disorder, alcohol and drug abuse can increase suicidal risks. When being treated, the patient should be completely honest about his or her alcohol or drug intake for the safest treatment and when the best chance of getting better. The treatment for alcohol and drug abuse is varied, but always include a strong psychosocial component. They've included a lot of different resources on their site, which I will not go into, that help with this and help people to recognize it. The whole point of me covering this is just to let you know about the different treatments that are available depending on what it is, okay? I'll take a short break and I'll be right back. Now, something I have to go into here, and I don't know if I can make this as clear as day. If you're ever having thoughts of suicide, say you're a person listening and you're having thoughts about suicide, and or you're maybe you know someone who is considering it, you need to find support. Bring hope to those affected by suicide, whether it be yourself or someone else. This is my attempt to do so, as with my anything else that I do, is bring in information to those who need it. If you're ever having thoughts of suicide, it's important to contact the nearest health support center to your area for advice and help and guidance before you do anything. Because killing yourself doesn't just hurt you, it hurts everyone else around you. And it doesn't solve the problem, okay? Many people have tried over the years to solve their problems to do so, and it hasn't helped anybody. If you're ever in a state of distress, reaching out is the first step to safety, okay? Call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, okay? If you're a veteran, call the Veterans Crisis Line. And if you're not safe with talking to someone, you don't feel like talking to anybody, you can always text them. They're available to you 24/7, okay? The Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-273-8255. And as for veterans, the number is similar, but it's not the same. You dial the same number. 1-800-273-8255, but for veterans, you'll press 1 on the options list. Okay? This is the best way to help anybody or to allow those who are currently in that position to seek some help that will actually help them. This is how you can take action and help prevent someone from making a mistake that they'll regret later. Now, let's take a turn here and go in a different direction. There's 4 things I want to quickly cover. I'm not going to go too much in depth on them. If you want to find out more, visit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention website. They'll have the rest of this information available to you. There are 4 categories I want to keep in mind, and they're willing to help you with just about any of them, okay? Say you've lost someone to suicide, or you're worried someone might be at risk, or you've made an attempt yourself, you know, or worse yet, your loved one has made an attempt or actually committed it. They have links on their website to help you with each one of these situations. Say you lost someone to suicide. You're not alone. Suicide affects millions each year, and thanks to their donors and volunteers, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is able to be there to help you. Okay? They have practical information for immediately after a loss. They have resources for lost survivors, how to take care of yourself, how to connect with other survivors. They even have things such as International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day, a survivor outreach program, and survivor support groups. And then they even have a program set aside to honor a loved one, doing things such as memory funds, out of the darkness walks, and even memory quilts. I don't know how to quilt, to make a quilt yet, but it's something I want to learn how to do, just simply for that sake. What about when someone is at risk? If you're in that position, how do you talk to someone who may be struggling with depression or anxiety? First things first, have an honest conversation. Okay? If you think someone is thinking about suicide, assume you are the only one who will reach out. Here's how you talk to someone who may be struggling with their mental health. First things first, talk in private, not in public. 2, listen to their story. 3, tell them you care about them and actually mean it, okay? Don't just say it. People can tell when you're sincere. As with in another podcast, I've already covered that. 4, ask directly if they are thinking about suicide. And then 5, encourage them to seek treatment or to contact their doctor or therapist if they have one. And then 6, avoid debating the value of life, minimizing their problems, or giving advice. Never do this, okay? Because you might end up pushing them further over the edge. If a person says they are considering suicide, take the person seriously, not as a joke, and stay with them. Help them remove lethal means. Don't leave anything around them that can cause harm to themselves. When you get a chance to immediately call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is the number I gave earlier, or just text TALK to the number 741741, and you'll get connected to a trained crisis counselor to help you. And they're available 24/7, like I mentioned before. And if worst comes to worst, escort them to a mental health service or an emergency room immediately, okay? Now, on the opposite end, say you're the person who made an attempt and you're listening to this. They're able to help you after an attempt and even have voices of hope that can guide you in the right direction. There are many different ways in which you can do this, and while I'm not going to condone one over the other. Each one has its own purpose, and each one is for a different kind of person, okay? And like I said, I'm not going to cover these too in depth, because most people aren't going to sit here and read through all of this. Basically, after an attempt, they have a guide on their site that'll help you immediately after an attempt. They ask to help you figure out how did you even get here. They help you to interact with your family and your friends and show you things you can do to support your recovery. Even provide you a safety plan and information for your family and friends that can help you. Along with that, like I mentioned before, they have the Voices of Hope. The Voices of Hope, if I could simplify this as simple as possible, is a series of videos featuring those who have struggled with suicide, unscripted interviews with people speaking from their own personal experiences. Now, you can choose to watch these videos or you don't have to. Again, it's up to you. But it's all for your benefit to help you prevent yourself from making the worst mistake of your life. Now, on the last note here, say your loved one has made an attempt. They offer you resources that help them with the same issue, okay? When the loved one has made an attempt, what to do. Also, the same voices of hope if needed, okay? Suicide is not a game, okay? It is very serious, and it should be taken as such. A person's life is not something as simple as fading grass as it dries and burns up in the sunlight, okay? No one person is insignificant or more important than the other. This is a very serious topic. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. God bless.